Bushell Show. The Shell Show, starring Joe Cook, an amalgamated Salma Gundy, to say nothing of a motley melange, of entertainment studded with these stars. From radio, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare. From opera, Giovanni Benedetto. From the nightclubs, the original Memphis Five. From Hollywood, Eleanor Holm and Art Jarrett. From the circus, Dexter Fellows and Toto the Clown. From vaudeville, Harry Foster Welch. From the comic strips, Rube Goldberg. And from Evansville, our star, Joe Cook. And from Ernie Watson, the music.
His back to the wall, his nose to the grindstone, his head in the clouds, and his ear to the ground, Little Joe Cook.
Foster, you forgot my little finger.
Oh.
Everybody seems to be forgetting things. Bob Waldrop forgot to say that we will not have the marble voice crooner tonight.
Oh, you said I could sing, Joe.
Well, maybe next week, young man. But right now, I've been thinking what a remarkable thing invention is. Why, in my own lifetime, I've seen the sailboat give way to the steamboat, the vacuum cleaner replace the carpet beater and the sore arm, the telephone take the place of the back fence gossip party, the ice bag has replaced the headache, and finally the radio, a new method of communication and a new avenue for entertainment. It's wonderful how far we have progressed in radio. Why, I can remember only a few years ago, we used to tickle the cat whisker on our crystal set and get...
How do you do, everybody? How do you do? How do you do, everybody? How are you?
But now we sit in front of our 88-tube, worldwide and back, hot and cold radio console, twirl the blue-white diamond dial, and we get...
How do you do, everybody? How do you do? How do you do, everybody? How are you?
What a difference a few years made. But here are those same two gentlemen whose formula for spreading happiness caught on so well in those early days of radio, and today is more popular than ever. The Happiness Boys, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joe. Hiya.
Hey, Joe, your introduction makes us feel as old as Methuselah.
Who was Methuselah? Your piano player?
Oh, no, no. He was a man about 900 years old.
Who, your piano player?
No, Methuselah.
Well, he doesn't look a day over 800. And neither do I. You know, I carry my age well, don't I?
Yes, sir.
I remember my father trying to get me on a trolley car without paying my fare. The conductor turned around and said, "You'll have to pay for him. He's over age." So I paid for my father.
It was in October 1921.
What was in 1921?
October.
Oh.
When we made our first broadcast.
Well, I'm glad you got me and my father off that trolley car. It was awfully crowded.
It was in October 1921.
But let's bring back some pleasant memories, boys. Do you remember any of the songs you first sang over the air?
It was in October 1921.
Again?
Hey, listen, Joe. The only way to stop him sings. Now, here's a song called I Never Laughed So Much in All My Life.
Yes, Joe, this song is 15 years old.
That's what I like. Stuff hot off the press. Yes.
Now, Now, many incidents occur that strike us rather funny.
And just because a healthy laugh is worth far more than money,
we're going to tell a few of them that's apt to tickle you.
If we should laugh while telling them, forgive us, please do.
Now, women run the elevators where we both reside. A kid asked for the 8th floor as the car began to glide.
And when the car stopped at the 8th, we thought we'd both go daft.
We even found amusement in an elevator shaft. We never laughed so much in all our lives. We never laughed so much in all our lives.
He said, "This is your floor, my son." And then the little pup
replied, "You're not my mother, even though you brought me up."
Oh, we never laughed so much in all our lives. Honest, we never laughed so much in all our lives.
Once we were both stranded back in dear old Evansville.
And all we had between us was a single dollar bill.
Now we spent that buck for food, and then to a swell hotel we went.
Because we knew Joe Cook, we thought it wouldn't cost a cent. We never laughed so much in all our lives. We never laughed so much in all our lives.
Do you know, Mr. Cook, we shouted to a clerk quite deaf.
He said, "The only cook I know is just the hotel chef."
We never laughed so much in all our lives. Honest, we never laughed so much in all our lives.
A show that's filled with joy and mirth for every girl and boy on earth. See funny freaks in frivolous rebels. See dangerous feats by brave daredevils. And top it off, why, both those frowns, here come the troupe of comical clowns.
Just a moment, please. Presenting the greatest of all clowns, the famous Toto. Thousands of people have seen Toto in the circus, but they have never heard his voice. For Toto has never spoken in public. Tonight, for the first time, Toto speaks. The solution to our traffic problem. The smallest automobile you've ever seen. It's only 2 feet high. You could almost park it in your vent pocket. Only trouble is, I don't think it's big enough to hold anybody. Why, who's inside? Nobody else but Toto himself. Hey, and look, and he's got a great big suitcase with him. And a little dog, too. Hello, Toto. Hey, Toto, come over here a minute. Hey, Toto, come here. I want to talk to you. How are you there, boy?
Tell me, how
did you ever manage to crawl into and out of that mousetrap?
Well, you know, this is my own little automobile.
Uh-huh.
It's got a collapsible body.
Well, you'd have to have a collapsible body to get into that sardine can.
I got a collapsible body. What's me do?
Hey, Toto, stand up. He's falling down like a bunch of rags.
Stand up.
Toto, you fold up like a human concertina. How do you do it?
Why? You relax and you collapse. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Well, I've always been afraid that someday, if I relax, I might collapse altogether. You want to try it again, huh? Let me try that again. Oh, now, stop it, will you? Get up there. Stop falling down. Toto, you have no more bones than a jellyfish. Now, come on, now, tell me. How many years have you spent with circuses?
All my life.
Nearly all your life.
Nearly.
Well, that's a pretty long time, isn't it? How long does it take you to put that clown makeup on your face?
Oh, about 40, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Not quite as long as it takes the average woman to make up.
Well, we still got the same result.
You both get the same result. Toto, you're not as big a clown as you're painted. Now, you seem to know women pretty well. Have you ever been engaged or married?
Oh, once in a while.
What? you're supposed to say...
Yeah.
You were engaged, weren't you, huh?
Yes.
Who were you engaged to?
To a little lady. She was an acrobat girl.
She's an acrobat, huh? Don't tell me she turned on you.
No, but she let me flop.
Uh-huh. Well, something like it. Who'd she go for?
Oh, she flipped over to Stretto, the rubber man.
Oh, the rubber man.
Yeah.
You don't love his elastic. Maybe she was thinking of future bouncing babies.
You always was clowning.
You were. I guess he tried to pull the rubber man's leg, huh?
No, it's not back to him.
Oh, it's not back, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I once knew a rubber man who caught his finger in a door and didn't notice it until he'd walked about 3 miles. Then somebody opened the door. Boy, was he put out.
Out? Back in Epsonville?
No, Epsonville. Evansville. Where did you get your start in circus life?
Well, Father had a circus in Europe.
Mine too.
I never hear of a cook circus.
You heard of the Barnum and Bailey circus, though, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, you mean to tell me that you didn't know that the Barnum and Bailey circus was really owned by Cook Senior?
Can you imagine it?
Well, of course, he didn't really own it, you see, Toto, but one spring, Barnum and Bailey's posted one of their circus bills on the side of Father's barn. Father had a strict rule against bill posting. In fact, he was the originator of the pay-no-bills. Post-no-bills idea. So ever since then, my father felt he had a legal interest in the Barnum and Bailey circus.
Can you imagine? Joe, you ought to be in circus.
You don't mean I should be a freak in the circus, do you?
No, you can jungle, you can sing and dance, yeah. And you look like a clown.
I look like a clown. Now listen, Toto, don't let this suit I'm wearing fool you.
No, it's not your suit, it's your face.
Well, that's different, Toto, that's different. Say, tell me, in all your circus experience, what do you remember best?
Oh, when the hippo had a toothache. What you call that?
Oh, yeah, toothache. You had it right. Perfect. You know, I had a hippopotamus of a toothache myself the other day. Yeah. What did you do?
Oh, we had to pull it out.
Well, that was right. What did you use? Block and tackle?
No. We father went and get some big pliers.
Yeah.
In the blacksmith shop.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes, sir.
And then he stood in front of the hippo.
He stood in front of the hippo. Why didn't he get inside the hippo? There must have been plenty of room.
While he was scared, he get lost.
Oh, he's afraid he get lost.
Yeah.
Then what happened? What did you do then?
Well, I had to tickle the hippo with a feather, you know.
Oh, I see. You were tickling him to keep him in good humor, huh?
No. So he yawned.
Oh, so he yawned and opened his mouth.
Father had just a good hold on the tooth.
Yes. Yeah? And
then it happened.
What happened? Did the hippo inhale and swallow your father?
No, the hippo sneezed and blew my father 10 feet away.
Uh-huh.
Then he was down, but the tooth was out. Can you imagine it?
Well, Toto, that proves the old adage, the tooth will out. Toto will now give us a lovely lilting concert on the concertina.
Can you imagine it?
Here we go. Very pretty. I'll play it pretty, Toto. Is that pretty, Ernie?
That
is pretty.
Nothing like music.
That was easy. Laughs.
About Howard Hughes flying from the coast to New York in 7.5 hours?
Well, that's nothing. I drove here in 3 hours.
From the coast?
No, from the Bronx. And that's making good time, isn't it, Bob Waldrop?
Well, not very, Joe, but it certainly is hard to make good time in an automobile nowadays. With all the red lights and stop streets and heavy traffic, 4 out of every 5 miles you drive are stop and go. It seems like you spend more time starting and stopping than you do covering ground. And you waste a lot more than time. You're also apt to waste a lot of gasoline. Every time you shift through your gears after a traffic stop, you can use up enough gas to carry you 1/3 of a mile. But now you can cut down this heavy consumption of gasoline by using Super Shell. It's a new type gasoline made by a special balancing process. This process does to gasoline what cooking does to food, makes it more usable and digestible for your engine. The result is that your engine can get the full benefit of the high energy content of Super Shell, whether you're starting, accelerating, or driving along. There's less waste, so naturally every tank full lasts you longer. Begin right away to get this saving. From now on, have your tank filled with Super Shell. There's a Shell station in your neighborhood.
youngster, everybody in our neighborhood thought I was going to be an opera singer. Two or three times a week, they'd hear my powerful high soprano voice emanating from the woodshed where my father was practicing a rapid, rhythmic up-and-down beat on my country seat in Evansville. One day, an Italian music teacher heard my leather lungs, and he told my father that anyone who could make that much noise lying face downward would positively shake the rafters of an opera house if permitted to stand erect. But my dad paid no heed. He just swung that slipper with the soul of an artist. He was the originator of swing. Well, the Italian said that he'd make a great singer out of me for 25 cents a lesson if I would develop my chest by sawing all the wood in his backyard. So Father agreed, and I soon had a chest like a lion and a voice just as sweet. I mention this incident because tonight a 13-year-old baritone is going to sing for us. He's right here, and I'm happy to present Giovanni Benedetto. Good evening, Mr. Benedetto.
Why don't you call me Joe, and I'll call you Joe.
Well, that'll be confusing. I won't know who's talking. I'll call you Joe, and you call me Giovanni.
All right, Giovanni.
Well, Joe, how did you become an opera singer at the age of 13?
My father had a very good tenor voice, and I think he handed it down to me.
Yeah, but you're a baritone. He must have handed it down about two tones lower than he intended to. Think how terrible it would have been if he had gone a little further. You might have had to go out and get yourself a big Adam's apple and sing Asleep in the Deep.
Well, Giovanni, instead, I'm going to sing La Donna Mobile.
You said it, Joe. Women are fickle. La Donna Mobile.
La Donna Mobile, qual più mal vento, mota l'accento, piedi pensiero. Ormai non senti si, felicia pieno, chi sopra il cielo, alla via d'amore. La donna mobile, qual più mal vento, mota d'accento, piedi pensiero.
Couldn't wait to get the Morning Courier. And when it came, I'd fight for the comics, sister would fight for the fashion page, mom would fight for the cooking recipes, and pop would fight for the fun of it. And I'd lie on the floor in the corner and read Boob McNutt, Mike and Ike, They Look Alike, Foolish Questions, and Professor Lucifer G. Butts, never dreaming that one day I'd have the pleasure of presenting to you the creator of these grand internationally known comic strips, whose newest cartoon character, Lollapalooza, and her lazy brother Vincent, is now sweeping the country. Rube Goldberg. Rube, it's good seeing you again. When was the first time we met?
Well, about 15 years ago, Joe.
Isn't that about the time you originated Boob McNutt?
I think it was.
Sounds like I might have been the inspiration.
Well, I never forget a face. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you inspired me, too, you know. I've been doing a little drawing myself. I drew a swimming pool, and it looked so real, four people got hurt diving into it.
So you forgot to draw the water, huh?
No, I drew the water, but I didn't draw it deep enough. And then I drew a train coming toward me at full speed.
And what happened?
I don't know. I got killed.
I wondered why you always looked so pale.
You know, I'm also what they call a mustache painter over.
A mustache painter over?
Sure. Whenever I see a picture, I've got to put whiskers on it. You know, I got a perfected soul that a beard looks fine on Shirley Temple, but I can't get Garbo to look right in sideburns and a mustache.
Joe, I didn't come here to discuss art with you. I'm a little peeved because you've been telling people your inventions are more practical than mine.
Well, the truth is the truth.
Well, didn't I invent the special trash can for bridge prizes? Saves you the trouble of taking them home.
And a handy little thing. But how about my backwards calendar for people who don't like tomorrow?
I've got another invention,
Tom. Oh, that invention's mine.
Yours? Well, you haven't even heard it yet.
Yeah, that's right. It's not mine yet, but it will be. What is it?
No, I won't tell.
Oh, well, I'll guess. Now, wait. Now, don't get mad. Yeah. Is it a dorm knob?
Nope.
A mouse trap?
Yes, it's an alarm clock.
Yeah, I thought so. But you're supposed to say about what kind
yes,
of an alarm
but what
clock?
Kind of an alarm
yeah,
clock?
That's right. See, I don't have to tell you.
Hold on, I'm clock.
Say it again.
Here.
Let's make sure to know it.
All right, I won't rattle
yeah,
the paper.
Say, but what kind,
but what kind of an alarm clock, Joe?
Oh, one with a bell on it.
Yep, but it's a rubber bell.
No, you mean a rubber ball, don't you?
No, a rubber bell so that when it rings, it doesn't wake you up.
Well, what good is that, Rube? I'd rather have a clock without any bell.
But that's not an alarm clock.
Neither is my mother, but she used to wake me up every morning. But I've got a real invention I'm working on. It's for getting into your house when you haven't got your key with you. Now, look, you take a bass drum and start banging on it until a crowd collects, thinking it's a parade.
Oh, yeah.
Then you take up a collection, and somebody gives you a lead quarter, so you start fighting with him. Then the rhinoceros that lives next door...
What rhinoceros?
Oh, this invention only works if there's a rhinoceros living next door, you see.
Nice neighbor.
Yeah, well, the rhinoceros comes out of his house to see what the noise is about, and you bet him $1,000 you can guess his weight. Now, of course, he doesn't know how much he weighs, so he can't prove you're wrong, and you win his $1,000. Then a hold-up man hears that you have $1,000, and he comes along and holds you up. Now, he starts going through your pockets and finds your key, which has been in your vest pocket all the time. So you take the key, let yourself into the house, and there you are. How's that, huh?
That's swell, Joe, but suppose there's no door.
Then you just ride the rhinoceros around the streets all night.
Joe, I've got an idea for a woman's purse that can't ever get too full.
I know. They carry everything in them, from hairpins to opera singers.
No, it's all simple and logical. And it's got an animal in it, too.
Oh, well, let's hear about it.
Well, here's how it works.
Uh-huh.
As the handbag fills up and starts to bulge, it presses against lever A, which starts sauerkraut B cooking in the kitchen. French parrot C chokes on the fumes of the sauerkraut, and the French maid D thinks the gurgling noise of the parrot is the voice of her sweetheart calling from the outside. She rushes to the window E, and being very tall, knocks the plaster off the ceiling F.
Yeah, but doesn't that hurt the maid's head?
Sure, but she's getting good money, and nothing hurts if you're well paid.
Oh.
Now, I'm talking like
yes,
you are.
Yes, yes.
Now the plaster falls into a bucket G, which bobs up and down on cord H, which causes file I to cut chain J and release mongoose K.
Now, wait a minute. The mongoose lives in India.
Sure he does.
Then what's he doing over here near the woman's handbag?
How do I know? And don't forget, I'm your guest here tonight.
Yeah, I know, but the mongoose ain't.
Anyway, the mongoose is crazy about jelly beans.
Oh, a sweet tooth, huh?
Yeah. He sees a jelly bean dangling from the bottom of the handbag and swallows it. The jelly bean is really attached to a zipper, which opens the bottom of the handbag and lets everything drop out, making room for more junk.
Boy! Rube, there's an invention to end all inventions.
And handbags.
Well...
Shell Show, starring Joe Cook. Yet to come, Art Jarrett and Eleanor Holm, Harry Foster Welch,
the original Memphis Five, and Dexter Fellows. In just a moment, we continue. WEAF, New York.
And here he comes, that answer to a maiden's prayer, if she's not particular, Joe Cook.
In my interviews on this show, I've had the pleasure of talking things over with some of the world's greatest celebrities. I've had a chance to learn all about Tarzan and tree climbing from Johnny Weissmuller. I've gone to bat with Babe Ruth about baseball. I've skated with and fallen for Sonia Henney. And in fact, I've spoken to so many celebrities, I'm beginning to feel like one myself. But tonight brings a studio guest I never really expected to meet. Not in this world, anyhow. I refer to Napoleon the First. Now, lest you think that I imagine I'm Napoleon, let me step out of my straitjacket and explain. The Napoleon here tonight is Phil Napoleon, the first exponent of jazz trumpeting in America. Phil is the leader of the famous original Memphis Five. He and his four co-jazzers, there's a word for you, are here in the studio to recreate for you the music that brought them world fame, presenting the original Memphis Five. Greetings, Napoleon. Where's Josephine?
Home washing dishes.
Say, many a modern Napoleon's been exiled for a remark like that, Phil. What a lulu that was. So this is your original gang, huh?
Yes, Joe. Reading left to right, Frank Signorelli at the piano. Jimmy Lytell on the clarinet. Miss Mole behind the trombone. On the drum. And myself going through here.
There you are, the original Memphis Five.
None of whom were born in Memphis or ever even saw Memphis.
Is that so? Now, that's where you fellas are different from the original Evansville Five, which my grandfather organized. None of them ever saw outside of Evansville. That's why they call themselves the Savannah Sextet.
Was it anything like our Memphis Five?
Well, not exactly, Phil. The original Evansville Five consisted of my grandfather at the piano, my uncle under the piano.
Let me go away out of sleep on this piano. Go away, you fellas.
My nephew played the flute and sang at the same time.
Sweet Adeline.
And my second cousin played the harp and doubled on the bass drum, while my father played the horses.
Was he lucky?
Yes, on the days he didn't bet. But you fellows have been pretty lucky at playing music ever since you first organized. Just when was that, Phil?
In 1917. But very few people knew about it until 1919, when we began making phonograph records. Fortunately, the records spoke loudly, and we began to catch on.
Well, speaking of playing loud, you will admit to that, won't you?
Oh, yes. We played loud, all right. So loud you couldn't hear the drums.
You know, I remember one time you played in South Bend, and you fellows played so loud that in Evansville, 30 miles away, we just opened the windows and danced to your music.
Oh, that's carrying a thing pretty far, Joe.
Yeah, isn't it? But speaking of those early records, Phil, what was the recording that really brought you into public notice?
I wished I could shimmy like my sister Kate.
What an ambition. You know, I remember hearing quite a lot about Sister Kate shimmying. She was the greatest wriggler and wiggler of her time.
Yes, Joe. Sister Kate was the phonograph field. We recorded that in the records over here.
Kate... Pretty tired by the...
Yes, but she could take it, Joe. And she was the answer to five hungry musicians' prayers.
All right then, Philip, prepare to have another meal on Sister Kate, because we want to have her shimmy at her best to the accompaniment of her old friends, the original Memphis Five. Now, you've all heard the swing of today. Well, here's the swing of 20 years ago, and I dare you to notice the difference.
Thank you.
Sometimes an apple a day keeps the doctor away, or is that applesauce?
Well, little green apples don't keep the doctor away.
You're right, Foster. When my mother used to put those little green apples into a pie, we'd call in every doctor in Evansville.
For a stomachache?
No, for a piece of pie. They loved it, and so does Bob Waldrop.
You're right, Joe. Everyone knows that little green apples make wonderful apple pie. But if you think back to your childhood days, you'll remember that little green apples are not very digestible when eaten raw. They need to be cooked to be made digestible. Now, it's pretty much the same way with gasoline. It needs to be put through a balancing process before it's really digestible for your motor, and so efficient for stop-and-go driving. Otherwise, you can waste enough gasoline on three quick getaways to carry you a whole mile. So it's no wonder your tank becomes empty so quickly. But now you can get a gasoline that goes farther on stop-and-go driving. It's Super Shell, a new type gasoline that's been made really digestible for your motor by a special balancing process. This process completely rearranges the chemical structure of this gasoline. Your motor can get the benefit of the tremendous energy packed into Super Shell. There's less waste than all that starting and accelerating you do. So naturally, your tank doesn't become empty so soon. You don't have to buy gasoline quite so often. But see for yourself. After this, get Super Shell.
Down at our branch office, the Metropolitan Opera House, a place I like almost as well as fried egg sandwiches, it takes a couple of hundred people just to put on one opera. I got to speculating on what they would do if they suddenly had an epidemic and nobody could go on. And then I thought of Harry Foster Welch, the man who does a whole opera single-handed, or should I say, single voice. Every sound you hear will come from Harry's own throat. He uses no gadgets. Harry takes us to the opera house where the orchestra is tuning up for Carmen. Harry Foster Welch.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, we're introducing at this time our guest conductor, Arturo Toscanini, this beautiful opera of Carmen. The first call for the Toyota Oriental of the Luna. On pivot. From Madrid, Spain. Ah, boy, I can see that big one passing me. Ah, the Queen and the Grand Duchess of Portugal. Lily Pons, the Queen of Spain. Rosa Ponzel, the Grand Duchess of Portugal. Take the royal box to review the big bullfight. These high paid artists take their time. Yes, sir. That bull took one look at the queen. He says, ah, she looks sweet tonight. I will fight to my death. And the matador. Dino Martini, with his beautiful black horse, charges through the arena with his sword all sharpened. And what a bullfight we'll be seeing now. So here he comes, Dino Martini. That's a horse. Ah, my queen, Don Sebastian, the Toyador de Lucha from Barcelona. Now the bullfight of all time is on. Aha! Something happened. One of the bulls, he got Nino. He's lying on Nino. Nino pushes the bull aside. He takes one look at the queen, and he sings, Carmen!
Salum caro tarior dor Aponia, aronia de disra Aponia A ricorda Anne col Aponia
old, he jumped out of a barber's chair to run after a circus parade. And he's been running after circuses ever since. Or rather, in front of circuses. He was the advance man and press agent for such great shows as Pawnee Bill's Historic Wild West Show and the Buffalo Bill Wild West Show. And he's now press agent for Ringling Brothers and the Barnum and Bailey Circus combined. In this work, Dexter Fellows met and was associated with many of the great historical characters that made America. And he's got plenty of interesting stories about them. Some of which you may have read in his book, This Way to the Big Show, Mr. Dexter Fellows. Hi, Dexter.
Hi, Joe. Joe, you come from Evansville, don't you?
Why, yes, but how did you know?
I listened to the radio.
Say, have you ever been in Evansville?
Been in Evansville? I've been in jail in Evansville.
Well, how did you get there?
The usual way, I got arrested.
Yeah, that is a good way to get in jail. Well, you're not the man who posted those circus bills on my father's barn, are you?
I might have been. I posted a lot of bills in my time.
Is that what you were arrested for?
No. The Buffalo Bill Show was coming to town. The Evansville police were looking for pickpockets. And they picked me.
They picked the wrong fellows, huh?
Yes, picking pockets was a little out of my line, but I had a devil of a time proving it.
Well, how did you convince them?
Gave them a couple of passes to the Wild West Show.
Oh, yes, an idea. Mr. Fellows, is the circus coming to New York this year?
Absolutely. Why?
You know, you look a little like a pickpocket to me. How about some passes?
I think I can arrange for a couple of Annie Oakleys for you.
Speaking of Annie Oakleys, the real Annie Oakley was the big star of your show, wasn't he?
Oh, no. The big star was Buffalo Bill himself. And there was a character. A very modest man who would never brag about his exploits, although he had plenty to brag about. More than any other one person, Buffalo Bill Cody made possible the winning of the Great West. He was one of the greatest Indian fighters of all time.
And he sure had a great show. I remember seeing it as a boy. Say, wasn't Sitting Bull in that show?
Not when you saw it, Joe. It was even before I joined the show. Sitting Bull was a great Indian, but he was not a warrior, as most people think. He never fought. He was a medicine man. He preyed on the superstitions of the Indians, and through this control of them, urged them on to battle.
So that's why they called him Sitting Bull.
What do you mean?
He just sat around and let the stooges do the fighting. But what about some of the real Indian warriors?
The greatest of all was Chief Joseph of the Nez Perces, sometimes called the Red Napoleon. For he was just as great a diplomat as he was a warrior. I'll never forget the first time he heard Buffalo Bill announce his riders as the real American cavalry. When Chief Joseph heard this, he turned and quietly said, "They are not real Americans. We are the real Americans." And I thought of what had happened to this proud Indian 20 years before, when, in 1875, gold was discovered in the territory occupied by his tribe in northeastern Oregon. Scheme after scheme had been tried by the whites to get that land away from the Indians, but to no avail. Finally, General Oliver O. Howard, with an army of 2,000 men, was dispatched to get the land by force, if necessary. He arranged a treaty council with Chief Joseph, to whom we find the general talking.
I'm sorry, Chief Joseph, but your tribe must move.
Why?
Because a great many white people are coming out here, and room must be made for them. You and your people will have to go to the Indian reservation at Colville, Washington.
Our people have lived here a great many moons, General Howard. We would let things be as Great Spirit Chief made them.
And you refuse to move?
I do not believe Great Spirit Chief gave one kind of man right to tell another kind of man what he must do. Here we have lived. Here we shall die.
Then you deny my authority?
Are you the Great Spirit? Did you make the world, sun, rivers to run for us to drink?
The law says you're to move to the reservation. If you don't, I'll have to take the matter into my own hands.
I have spoken for my people. I not change.
But look, see that land off to the east? Now that's good land, already occupied by both Indians and whites. Suppose I gave you that land and moved the white people off.
No. Homes belong to white men. I not have right to take their homes. You not have right to take our homes.
All right. I've tried to reason with you, but I see that's impossible. I'll give you 30 days to move to the reservation. If you don't, it means war.
My people, I call you to counsel to help me choose. White man want us to move. If we do not, war will come. White men have many soldiers, many guns. My people, shall we leave our homes?
Why should we leave home? My father murdered by white men. Now white men drive us away. The more we give white men, more they want.
Yeah. It is best, my people. It is best we move.
No. Let us fight. We want war.
We want war.
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 War. War. War.
Silence. My people, you have chosen. We shall have war.
Chief Joseph, take my horse. Flee to hills.
No.
We hold out no longer. There are but a handful of braves left. Our women starving, children freezing, our cause hopeless. You must flee.
No.
If they capture you, they kill you.
I am still your chief. With heavy heart, I must go to White General and surrender. General Howard.
Yes, Chief General.
General Howard.
Yes.
I surrender. For my people. They are tired of war. Our chiefs are killed. Looking Glass dead. Tuhulhuhtoto dead too. All old men dead. It's cold. My people have no food. No blankets. Little children freezing to death. My people, some have run away to hills. No one knows. Where go? I want time to look for my children, to see how many of them I find. Maybe find them among dead. Hear me, General. My heart's sick, sad. From now, where the sun stands, with white men, I fight no more.
I was present the next time Chief Joseph met General Howard. It was at Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show. When Howard was announced, there was no sign of emotion on the old Indian's face, but a slight tightening of the lips. He stood up, shook hands with the general, and said a few words of greeting. I do not know, but I imagine that there must have been some bitterness in his heart. If there was, we know there was reason for that bitterness. And now, Joe, old dear, thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you for telling it, Dexter. And by the way, don't forget my two passes.
Annie Oakley.
Okay.
And only a pair, Joe.
Okay, Annie Oakley. heart of every romance. Sometimes boy meets girl at the meat market. Sometimes boy meets girl on a Ferris wheel, and they start going around together immediately. But here's where boy meets girl in a swimming pool. When Eleanor Holm met Arthur Jarrett, her heart popped like a raindrop on a straw hat. So may I present two of the nicest people you'd ever hope to live next door to. The boy, Art Jarrett, the popular singing star. The girl, Eleanor Holm, who holds every world's record in backstroke swimming from 50 to 880 yards. Page 838 in the World Almanac. Mr. and Mrs. Art Jarrett.
How do you do, Mr. Cook?
Hiya, Joe.
Say, do you know Joe well enough to call Mr. Cook well enough to call him Joe?
That's all. Wait, now, let's start this all over again. Let's might as well get it right.
Say, do you know Mr. Cook?
No, let's start from back.
All right. How do you do, Mr. Cook?
Hiya, Joe.
Say, do you know Mr. Cook well enough to call him Joe?
Know me well? Why, I'm the fellow who taught Eleanor the backstroke, didn't I, Eleanor?
Why, certainly not, Joe.
You see, Art, I told you. In fact, I originated the backstroke. One morning, while putting on my shirt, my collar button slid down my back. Well, I reached back to get it, first with my left hand, then with my right, and then vice versa, and I accidentally slipped into the bathtub, down through the drain, and halfway across the Pacific Ocean before I retrieved the button, which I didn't want anyhow because it made a green mark on my neck. But what's a collar button got to do with you? What are you talking about, Art, anyway?
Oh, Joe, I said nothing about a collar button. It was you who brought it up.
I should say I did, and what trouble I had bringing it up. Say, remind me to tell you about it sometime.
Why, you just told it, Joe.
Isn't that a coincidence? You know, speaking of coincidences, how long have you two been married?
4 years.
Great.
Seems like four.
You two get along great.
Fine.
Pretty good.
Nothing like harmony in the family. Eleanor, I understand Art taught you how to sing.
That's right.
And Art, I understand Eleanor taught you how to swim.
That's right.
How does he swim, Eleanor?
Like I sing.
And how does he sing, Art?
Like I swim.
That's a perfect arrangement. Do you ever go swimming together?
Well, we're together for the first 10 strokes.
What happens then?
I scream for help.
Do you get any?
No, you see, when I scream, everybody thinks it's Eleanor singing.
Well, what happens when Eleanor screams?
They think it's Art swimming.
Yeah, I can understand that. Sometimes I swim a little off key myself.
You swim a little off key?
Yeah, a little off key west. Oh. With Eleanor so fond of the water and you so fond of music, you better be careful. Never sing Old Man River. Eleanor's liable to dive out the window, which, of course, will be all right if she happens to land in the pool room. Was I right when I said you were a backstroke champion, Eleanor?
Yes, she'd rather swim backwards than forwards.
Well, maybe she doesn't like where she's going. She'd rather see where she's been, or, of course, if she wants to go where she's been, you've got to turn her around so that she swims backwards, forwards, and so forth. Have I made myself clear?
Sure, as they say in Pig Latin, aquid say, owed say.
Oh, a hog caller, huh? Say, did you two actually meet in a swimming pool?
Yes, it was a swimming meet, and no pun intended.
It's too late to apologize.
And Eleanor, when did you ever hear Art sing before you met him?
Yes, I heard him on the radio.
And you still wanted to meet him?
Yes.
What was he singing? Lover, swim back to me?
No, just plain lover.
What, no vanilla, no chocolate, just plain lover, huh?
That's right.
Well, Art, suppose you sing lover while Eleanor sighs and I learn something about romantic technique.
Okay, Joe.
Lover, when I'm near you and I hear you speak my name, softly in my ear you breathe a flame. Lover, while we're dancing, keep on glancing in my eyes till love's own entrancing music dies. My future is in you. You're every plan I design. Promise you'll always continue to be mine. Lover, please be tender when your tender fears depart. Lover, I surrender to my.
my design. Promise you'll always continue to be mine. Lover, please be tender when your tender fears depart. Lover, I surrender to my heart.
Art, that was great. Eleanor, what did you say the first time Art asked you to marry him?
No.
And the second time?
No, no.
Well, what about the third time?
No, no, no.
And the fourth time?
No, 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 no.
You in the movies and reading the coming attractions out loud. Next Saturday, January the 30th, is the birthday of the President of the United States. And among our guests, we are honored to have the President's mother, Mrs. James Roosevelt. Next week, we will also hear from Billy Scully, the boy soprano with a choir of boys' voices, Nick Lucas, guitar playing troubadour, Clyde Beatty, famous lion tamer, and a long list of other entertainers, not including the marble voice crooner.
Oh, gee whiz, Mr. Cook.
Patience is a virtue, young man.
When Joe Cook presents Nick Lucas, Clyde Beatty, Billy Scully, and as a special guest, the mother of our president, Mrs. James Roosevelt.